You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Fekati, White Island erupted on the 9th of December last year and has led to the deaths of 22 people, and many survivors have been left with severe burns. Yesterday, WorkSafe announced that criminal charges have been laid against 13 parties in relation to the Fekati White Island disaster last year. The nature of the charges have not yet been made clear. However, the 10 organisations charged will face a maximum fine of $1.5 million, and the three individuals will face fines up to $300,000 each. Some of the organisations involved have confirmed that they are facing charges. These groups are GNS Science, the National Emergency Management Agency, White Island Tours, and Volcanic Air Safaris. The owners of the island, the Buttle family, through Fekati Management Limited, are also among those charged. WorkSafe Chief Executive Phil Parks says this is the largest and most complex investigation the organisation has ever undertaken. Parks says that WorkSafe has come to the conclusion that the charged parties did not meet their obligations to do all they were required to do to look after the health and safety of the workers and visitors on Fekati at the time. Parks said the eruption was unexpected but not unforeseeable. This is why the 13 parties are facing criminal charges under the Health and Safety at Work Act. WorkSafe's investigation did not consider the rescue and recovery of the victims of the eruption, so the action does not involve this issue. I spoke with Shane Cronin, who is a professor of volcanology at the University of Auckland, about how the proceedings might impact New Zealand's approach to volcano hazard management in the future. We also talk about how easy it is to prepare for a natural disaster when they can't often be predicted down to the day, and also whether these proceedings will grow public awareness of volcanic activity and the risks around it. Here is Shane. WorkSafe has announced 13 charges around the Fekati White Island disaster. What impact will the proceedings have on volcanic hazard management?
Well, I hope that they'll have a positive impact in terms of bringing some light on some issues where there are perhaps gaps in the process that we have in New Zealand at the moment.
What exactly are those gaps, do you think?
The gaps, I think, are mainly in terms of who's responsible for taking action once warnings are issued. And I think that's primarily, you know, where we need to think about, say, for Fekati, who would be a responsible agency for, say, restricting access if there's warning of unrest, or for any volcanic or geothermal area, for that matter, that would be affected in the same way.
It must be pretty hard to predict what effect a natural disaster could have on people. Obviously, it wasn't predicted that, bang, on that day, that is when the volcano would erupt. So how do you prepare for natural disasters when you can't necessarily tell down to the day or the minute that something's going to happen?
Yeah, you're wrapping up a lot of quite complex stuff in there. They're good questions. So, you know, I think what you're getting to is the timing is the most difficult thing.
Yeah.
In terms of the effects or the impacts, I think we have pretty good handle on that, at least in terms of, you know, understanding the range of different types and the different sizes of explosions. And, you know, I think that, you know, that is probably something we know best. And in terms of when that happens is the most difficult thing. And, you know, that's a bit of a science step that we need to make. And, you know, we monitor these volcanoes with 24/7 sort of second-by-second monitoring. We may not necessarily be using that as effectively as possible for warning, but, because we've got to make a bit of a knowledge leap from what are some of these things like seismic signals actually telling us in relation to whether an eruption is going to happen or not.
And is it hard, perhaps, to tell what those seismic readings mean unless it happens?
Yeah, I think you learn by experience, and so the more events or more eruptions we have, the better we kind of know the system. But it's more than just waiting. I think we've got to be a little bit more proactive about the way we try to forecast things. There are experimental approaches out there where we, you know, we look at automated methods to look at things like seismic data. And they're a little bit held up, if you like, by, you know, waiting to see whether they actually work. But, you know, essentially, if we think they're going to work, I think we have to start throwing them at the wall and trying a lot of these things out. You know, because if you look at, say, Fakari is a good example, the last five eruptions, none of them have been predicted per se. Some of them have occurred during level two of the volcanic alert scale and some during level one. But, you know, we haven't had that sort of prediction of, you know, in the next 12 hours something's going to happen. And so if we've got tools that can start doing that, then I think we need to try and start rolling these out, even if we're not really fully sure about everything in terms of those tools yet.
Now, I just wanted your comment on just sort of a last thing that was in your comment with Science Media Centre. You spoke about how the worst possible outcome would be if science agencies such as GNS Science, which is facing charges, would become timid about making public statements for fear of being wrong or being prosecuted. Why is that important, that we avoid treating these groups too harshly?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, you know, what we've seen in Italy, for example, around a group of scientists were basically taken to court for failing, you know, for actually issuing a wrong forecast. And, you know, that put shivers through the spines of most hazard researchers around the world and people that are involved in both warning and providing hazard information to warning agencies. Because, you know, if you are wrong about something, and, you know, we're quite frequently are wrong, you know, that may be on the one side it's a false alarm, okay, and then everybody's upset because, you know, their activity's been restricted because it's a false alarm. But if you're wrong the other way and say, hey, you know, it's safe and there is an eruption, then, you know, people are concerned as to whether they're culpable for that action. I mean, and essentially, if you're doing everything in your best, but, you know, but power to be able to try and provide a warning and you just didn't know that other critical piece of information, then that's not, you know, that's not something we should be punishing. I mean, it's a process of learning. And hindsight is, you know, it's always easy to go back and say, oh, well, you know, we know this now. And you can't take that knowledge away from you and put yourself back in your shoes back at that time. And so I think we have to be quite bold in giving hazard forecasts and predictions, and we have to be prepared to be wrong. And I think what happens when these decisions or when these announcements or so on are questioned, it does make scientists nervous and make science agencies nervous. Now, I'm not sure what the context of these charges actually are in detail, and it may be that they're not challenging scientific freedom straight away, but they, you know, they do have the effect of making people a little more nervous about some statements they might want to otherwise make.
We talked a little bit about how this will impact the science community and sort of volcano hazard warning, but do you think it will have an impact on the public and the public's knowledge about volcanic activity, and if you're wanting to go and visit a volcano, like, these are the risks? Do you think that will also heighten people's knowledge about that?
Yes, I think it will bring the issue into the limelight, and, you know, we'll uncover some practices. It'll bring maybe a little bit of help and closure for the victims of the Fakari tragedy, you know, to see that we actually are questioning what we're doing, we are testing the systems we have, and we are looking to improve things for the future. So I think that those are all good things. And, you know, even bringing the, you know, the issue to the fore and bringing the understanding of hazards and risks of some of these activities to the fore is a really good thing. So, you know, if we brush it all under the carpet, we don't learn anything. If we do expose a few sensitive areas, you know, to, I don't know if this is the format, but it's certainly, it's a format to talk about some, you know, difficult hazard issues.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.